All right, so welcome to English class. We are ready for lesson one in light unit 708. Not all light units start like this, but this light unit actually begins with a review. So let's take a look at the beginning of the lesson. It says clause review, and that doesn't actually give you a very good idea of what's coming. Most titles do tell you what's coming. This one says clause review, and the first thing that you're going to see is a what is a group of related words that does not contain a subject and verb. A what? You may just say, to raise your hands.
Phrase,
good job. A phrase is a group of related words that does not contain a subject and verb. Like a phrase, a clause is a group of related words, but a clause contains a, finish it.
Subject and a verb.
Good job, very good. All right, so we are going to get started with our scrap paper. You see you have a piece of scrap paper? Oh, and I forgot to give you pencils. And we're going to be making what I call a sieve. Who knows what a sieve is? 7th and 8th graders old enough to know what a sieve is. Do you girls know what a sieve is? Use a sieve in the kitchen? Like a strainer, a filter? All right, so we're gonna make a sieve. And on top of your paper, I would like for you to write, and I'll put it on the board for you as well. Flip this over the correct way. On top of your paper, I would like for you to write, clause, phrase, sieve. Do that right on the top of your paper. Clause, phrase, sieve. Why do we need a clause, phrase, sieve? Do you ever get to a test and you wonder, so they ask you to figure out what is a phrase or a clause, and you feel like you're kind of groping around in the dark, and you grab and you say, I think that kind of looks like, and if somebody would say, how do you know that's a phrase? You'd say, I'm not really sure, it's kind of the right size. Or just, whatever. And you feel like you're groping around in the dark. So this filter is going to be designed, this sieve is going to be designed so that you can drop the group of words into the filter, and it's either going to fall out on the side of a phrase or the side of a clause, so that you will know for sure and get it right every time. This lesson is sort of an exciting lesson in English because you know how English has so many exceptions to the rule. You know, you have IE except, right? There's so many times that it's EI, actually. Well, there are no exceptions in this lesson to the phrase, clause, sieve. So we're gonna start like this, and maybe this part isn't really a filter. Let's think of this as the continental divide. You know what happens on the continental divide? On the continental divide, when a raindrop falls on one side, well, in east anyhow, it goes to the Atlantic, and if it falls on the other side of the continental divide, it ends up in the Gulf, all right? So we're gonna say that the clauses and phrases are gonna drop on this divide right here. So make a little arrow pointing up like that. And then after you've done that, make little arrows pointing down. All right, so the phrase or the clause is gonna land one on each side, and or on either side, and over here we're gonna actually, the marker's going away. Write the word phrase, and over on this side we're going to write the word, you want to guess, what are we going to write over here?
Clause.
Good job. Clause over here. And I'd like for us to have a dependable filter when we're done, so we know what to do with groups of words. Who can tell me, who can tell me which one of these has a subject and verb? Phrase or clause?
Clause.
Clause, good job. So over here you're going to write, contains subject and verb. And I perhaps should do a little bit of, and on this side, no subject and verb. I should perhaps do a little bit of that, all right? No S or V. Maybe do some abbreviating so we can get through it more quickly. All right, so we have that in place now. We're going to do the first part of our lesson. So you may take your pencils and go to number one, where it says, who would read this sentence for me? Jason, could you read the first sentence, please?
The starting point for all of these routes was Independence, Missouri.
All right, very good. By the way, I live close to Independence, Missouri. Did you know that? Not far from where Laura Ingalls and Paul and I used to live. Anyway, so the starting point for all of these routes was Independence, Missouri. Of these routes, is it a phrase or is it a clause? So we can look at the beginning of our filter and actually find the answer. Does it have a subject and verb in it or no? No? No subject and verb? No? All right, we're all agreed. No subject and verb. So write the answer in. And then you may go to number two. And what was your name again? I'm sorry.
Krista.
Krista, would you read number two, please, Krista?
The Journal of Santa Fe, which was then a part of Mexico, led southwest for independence.
Tiana, phrase or clause?
Clause.
Why?
Because it has subject and verb.
Very good. As a subject and a verb in. So we're going to fill that out. And that takes us to the next part. The next part says, Douglas, would you read the instructions in or the description in black, please?
Clauses are introduced by relative pronouns or subordinate pronouns.
All right. So I'm going to give you a little sneak preview into something that's coming just shortly. Oops, you're not supposed to see that, so you can do it yourself. All right. So we're going to jump ahead. I'm not exactly sure why this lesson is set up this way. Perfectly fine that it is, but I need you to make another continental divide, please, under clauses. Could you make another continental divide there? And we are going to put two labels under this one that have not been introduced to you yet, but they will be a little bit later in this lesson. We're going to write dependent and independent. And you probably remember from last year what an independent or dependent clause is. So let me ask you this, just to explain what independent. Now, actually, we're going to wait for that till we get to our lesson. Just leave that. We'll just leave it just like that. In fact, put a little, can you put parentheses under here, please? And just leave them empty as well. We're going to use them in a bit also. All right, back to what Douglas just read. He said, clauses are introduced by relative pronouns or subordinating conjunctions. And then we have our list of relative pronouns, our list of subordinating conjunctions. And if you would be in my class, you're reading highlighters like we have, then I would have you highlight relative pronoun and highlight subordinating conjunction in a different color. That way you remember where they are in your book, hopefully. And we're going to go right to number three. Put brackets around the clauses. Circle the relative pronouns. Within each clause, underline the verb twice and the subject once. I'll let you do the first one on your own. And raise your hand if you have a question. You may also raise your hand when it's complete. Good. Sort of rusty from, have some summer rust flying here, is that right? Not quite sure. Do you have a question on it? You got it? Do you have it or don't have it? Don't have it? That's okay. All right, so let's do it. Those who followed the Santa Fe Trail were more often traders than settlers. That's kind of a tricky one. Do you see a relative or a subordinator? I always call them subordinators. Maybe that's cheating a little bit. But do you see a relative pronoun or a subordinated conjunction in there? If you look at the list up above, you only have three. Oh, and by the way, your three relative pronouns that you have in today's lesson are just what, and what, Jason?
Who, which, and that?
Do you know anymore? From memory? Do you remember from last year? Do you remember anymore? You have to wait till next year. So they'll give you a little bit more of that later. But there's more to the story, okay? So who, which, and that for right now. Does anybody see the word who, which, or that in number three that could be a beginning of
who?
Who what?
Who followed the Santa Fe Trail?
Now, we're going to go further into our filter and help us to understand this a little better. There are three types of clauses. Three types of dependent clauses, and I hope you still have plenty of room. You still have plenty of room in your papers? All right, so we're going to go like this. Under the word dependent, we're going to actually make a divide that goes like this, and like this, and like this. Can you do that? Okay, good job. And this one we are going to call an adverb clause. Can you just write adverb clause on this side? It's getting a little low for me. Adverb clause. In the center, you're going to write adjective clause. And over here, just go like that. You're going to have to wait for that one, sorry. We don't even get to do it today. They don't talk about it today, so you have to wait for that one. We'll fill this filter in later on this school term, right? Or we'll wait if you'd be in my class. Okay, so adverb clauses, first of all. And under adverb clauses, I would like you to, I would like you to write under adverb clauses, maybe make a little star or a dash or something like that, and write what they begin with. What do adverb clauses begin with? This is drawing back, you know, we didn't exactly have this today. They're introducing it, but they're not saying what. Do you think it's subordinators or relatives? Adverbs and adjectives. You want to make a guess on that? I can help you with it because it isn't actually taught in today's lesson. Yes?
Relative?
Almost. Adverb clauses are actually subordinating conjunctions. I always like the adjective clauses better because, well, they're just relatives and they're really, really, they're just a few of them. So, subordinating conjunction gets written right here under adverb clause. Okay? That was a good guess, though. Adverb clause, subordinating conjunction. Under adjective clause, now you get to write relative pronoun. Over here, well, I guess you just have to make it blank because we're not going to tell you about that today. Do you remember what adverbs modify? Who remembers what adverbs and adjectives modify? Adverbs, let's start there. Tiana, you want to try? Okay, good. Verbs, adverbs, and adjectives. So we're going to have blank number three now. Go like this. Let's see, you have subordinate conjunctions here, correct? Okay, and now we're going to have verbs, adverbs, adjectives right here. And what do we have over here under adjective clauses? What do they modify? Or what do adjectives modify? Because the clauses do the same thing. Who knows what an adjective modifies? How about my black cat? Black is modifying cat, yes?
No.
Nouns, good. What else? Verbs. What replaces a noun?
Pronoun.
Pronoun, good job. So nouns and pronouns, very good. Over here we have nouns and pronouns. All right, so you have that part of your filter all filled out. And before we go further, I'm going to just jump up here and give you a little information. If you put a blank there underneath no subject and verb, and let's write what a phrase starts with. What does a phrase always start with? It was hard for me to get this through my head when I was in school. What does a phrase always start with? It starts with a big long word, but they're little tiny words. They're the name for them is big and long, but they're just tiny little words. Normally, like for, to, and then through is a little bigger. What are those called? Almost. That's a good guess. So for would be an adjective as a number. F-O-U-R would be, what about just F-O-R? Anybody want to guess? It's just been too long. What? Preposition. Good job. Preposition. So we're going to say begin with prepositions. And if you just want to put the word prep down for that, that'll be fine. All right. And over here, we are going to, actually, no, we're going to leave that for now. Now, here's the question I have for you. Do you understand what's going on with our sieve, or is it getting too complicated? We're going to take a couple groups of words and write them down. I'm going to write down the set of words over here. You don't have to write this one down. I'm just going to write it down. To the barn. Okay? So we're going to take this group of words. And we're going to put it right on top of this sieve. And we're going to say, does to the barn go this way or does it go this way? To the barn. Does it go toward the phrase or toward the clause? Well, the first thing we do is check to see if it has a... Douglas? You were going to just say the answer. Subject and verb. All right, now you may say the answer. Which way was it supposed to go? Phrase. Why phrase? You seem confident about that.
Because there's no subject.
There's no subject and verb. So you can be confident about it, and you could confidently label it as a phrase. Good job. The next one we're going to have, I won't write down, is going to be behind the house. Phrase or clause? Yeah. What? Doesn't have a subject and verb. How about that I chased? The bull that I chased. Yes?
Clause.
Clause, why?
Has a subject.
Has a subject and verb. So that gets you through the first part of the sieve, through the first part of the filter. Now we know if it's a phrase or if it's a clause. And in today's lesson, we have clause reviews. So clause contains a subject and verb. We're actually going to write one more part of this filter up here. And this is going to say what a clause begins with. It begins with a what or a what? The two lists of words that you had in your review today so far, we call them either, yes? Relatives or what?
Subordinate.
Good, relatives or subordinate conjunctions. So it begins with relatives or, and I'm running out of room, so we just go like that. Subordinate conjunctions, very good. Ready to get busy with that, so I'll let you do one more problem. Let's go to number six. Number six says, let's see. Krista, would you read it, please?
After Bethnal led the first wagon train to Santa Fe,
I, do you see a relative or a subordinate in there? A subordinate conjunction, anyway. A relative or a subordinate conjunction? Jason.
Subordinate.
What's a subordinate conjunction?
After.
After, good. So what's the clause? That's the beginning of the clause. What is the whole clause? Douglas. What's the entire clause?
After Becknell led the first wagon train.
Okay, did you hear that? He's not sure. What do you think? After Becknell led the first wagon train. You with him? Jason's with him. What do you girls think? After, yes. All the way to back. After Becknell led the first wagon train to Santa Fe and back. Ah, we have a disagreement. I love these. What are we going to do about it? All right. Who are you going to side with? Kind of have to side with the girl beside you, right? There's sort of a moral issue here. Yes.
To Santa Fe and back is a phrase.
To Santa Fe and back is a phrase. Do we agree with that part? Can to Santa Fe and back be a phrase? All right. Ready for the filter? Let's throw it up here. To Santa Fe and back. Subject and verb? To Santa Fe and back. Yes or no? Subject and verb? No. So, this side. It is a phrase. Now the question is, can a clause have a phrase in it? The girls are saying yes. The girls are saying yes. What do you guys think? Can a clause have a phrase in it? Should we ask all these teachers back here? What do you think? Jonah, you want to tell them?
Yes.
Yes. A clause can have a phrase in it. Very good. So go ahead and put your, and that's perfectly fine to pick the wrong spot. We learn, okay? That's how we learn. And there's nothing wrong with having a phrase and a clause together. And just shortly, we're going to be talking about, and we have to turn to the next page because we're going to run out of time. So let's go to the next page. Can we do that? And I'm sorry you don't have time to read more. I kind of feel like we should have done at least one more for you to be able to understand how to do that part, but we will move along. All right, the next page says there are two kinds of clauses. Jason, the sentence after that, please.
An independent clause contains the main thought of the sentence.
And Tiana, the next sentence, please.
It can stand alone because it has a complete
thought. Okay, very good. So are you independent or dependent? That's not really an English question, is it? Are you independent or dependent? Depends what you compare it to, right? Can you stand alone? Right? You can stand alone. So my son is saying not really, right? Because he knows that I'm dead and he's dependent, right? And I'm the independent one? Okay, but no, really, you can't stand alone. Independent clauses can stand by themselves, and that's what this was for. Independent can stand alone. Dependent cannot stand alone. Could you fill those parentheses in, please, on your filter, just so that you can remember which is dependent, which is independent? So dependent cannot stand alone. Independent can stand alone. And we have one more thing that we have to do quickly before we... Oh my, we didn't get to our sentences either. But that's okay. Let's go to the last part of your lesson today. They teach us yet about complex and compound and simple sentences. So we have independent sentences, and I'd like for you to write this yet on the bottom. Are your hands tired of writing? Is it too much writing for you? Especially in the middle of summer like this. So if you could just write the word combinations down on the bottom somewhere. And you'll have three sentences to write, so leave room to write three sentences. Maybe the other side of the paper, Douglas, like to the left. To your, yeah, there you go. So combinations. And we are going to talk about, you ready? We're going to talk about dependent and independent clauses. We can have an independent clause that stands all by itself, like I jumped, I ran, I, whatever I did, right? Or we have dependent clauses that describe what happened. So, or do we have some? After I went to bed, right? After I went to bed cannot stand by itself, can it? After I went to bed would be a fragment. My cat went hunting across the room. This was the first sentence, actually, I ran out of room. So it says, my unfortunate cat with tiger stripes made a huge mistake. Any phrase or clause in there? Any phrase or clause in, my unfortunate cat with tiger stripes made a huge mistake? Yes. Is a, because it does not have a. Excellent. Is there a clause in this? So we have with tiger stripes. Is there a clause in that sentence? So we're looking for a subject and verb now. And remember this. There might be an independent clause in there. In fact, there has to be an independent clause in there if there's a sentence. What's the independent clause? Yes?
My unfortunate cat
may. Okay, my unfortunate cat. You may actually include the phrase, remember? Because we may have phrases and clauses. So the whole sentence is an independent clause. My unfortunate cat with tiger stripes made a huge mistake. All right. After I went to bed, my cat went hunting across the road. So, anything in there relative or subordinating? Relative or subordinating. Anything in there? It's just been too long, right? Yes. Yes.
Subordinating.
Subordinating. And what's the word?
After.
After. So the clause is?
After I went to bed.
After I went to bed. Very good. And that cannot stand alone. So we're going to say that one is dependent. And once you have discovered that you have a dependent clause, your job is to figure out if it's an adverb clause, an adjective clause, or a, I'm going to tell you next year, okay? Or maybe later this year if we have time. But for today, no, actually not for today, for this book, it's just going to be either an adverb clause or an adjective clause. And it's very easy to answer that by looking to see if it starts with a subordinating conjunction. So you already know you have what kind of clause because it started with a subordinating conjunction. Yes, Jason. Douglas. Ever. Is he right, Jason? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he's right. The girls actually agree this time. Great girls, good job. So we have a subordinated conjunction, adverb clause, every single time. Okay? Now the confusing, well, we'll leave the confusing part. The last one is, it was the blinding headlights that disoriented my poor pet. Phrase or clause? It was the blinding headlights that disoriented my poor pet. Any phrase or clause in there? Yeah, what do you think? Okay, she said, that disoriented my poor pet phrase. I love how you just gave me the answer right away. The question is she right? Let's check it by the filter. So we put that, where is it? That disoriented my poor pet right up here. And we think, so, that disoriented my poor pet. Phrase or subject and verb or no subject and verb? No subject and verb? No. What's a verb? Hey, he says yes. What's a verb? What's a verb? Something that does something, right? Is anything being done in there? What's being done? It's being disoriented. Who's being disoriented? The pet's being disoriented, that is true, but we have, this is getting a little complicated for you, especially for a review. We have my poor pet, right? You recognize that as a phrase? Probably why you were calling the whole thing a phrase to start with, right? It was the blinding headlights that disoriented my poor pet. That disoriented my poor pet. Yes? Yeah. Clause after all. Very good. And we have disoriented as the verb, that as the subject, that disoriented my poor pet, modifying headlights, saying what kind of headlights we had, so we'd be an adjective clause. We're going to get into that in, I think, three lessons, all right? So we're just going to hold off on that for now. Okay, I think we're going to need to stop the class. Thank you so much for your participation. I do have a bonus sentence for you. All right, so could you write this bonus sentence down? Your bonus sentence is, and if you have this figured out by tomorrow and you have the phrases and clauses properly identified and everything's correct, I have a tiny little prize for you. The bonus sentence is, a love for hunting is what my cat and I had in common before that fateful night. What do you think happened to the cat? Any ideas? Again, a love for hunting is what my cat and I had in common before that fateful night. Class is dismissed and you may return to your seats. And that actually means you may go out if you're kind of warm and tired of sitting up here and don't want to be, have all these people staring at you, you're allowed to go. I wish I could go with you. Okay, so open discussion now, and I'm going to start with just completely open discussion on how this could have been done, how it could have been done differently. So many different ways to teach it, probably English in particular. There's so many different ways to teach it, and fun ways, not so fun ways. Especially, I find it especially challenging to teach English to boys. Boys don't generally enjoy English, and I find it hard to spice it up for them. So give us your ideas. Let's go ahead and get started. Anybody want to start? I might add this before we begin. Tomorrow I have to talk about critiquing respectfully. Okay, so please be. What I want to say is that critiquing is a good thing, and it's probably one of the most neglected tools. I think one of the most neglected helpful tools. There are things that we just don't critique anymore because we're scared of critiquing. We're scared of what we're going to get, and we're scared of how it's going to be given to us. So please don't be afraid to critique. Is that right, Nathan? Am I onto something there? Okay, so just tell me, all right? And I think we can all learn from that. And before coming to this class, I actually felt like I was the privileged one because I got to try some things and see what your thoughts are on it. And any of you upper grade teachers, having been given the same privilege, would have now had the chance to be critiqued. So let's get started. Maybe we'll just go to the outline. Why don't we do that just to kind of give it some, just to move along with it. And we'll open it up completely. Letter A, and I changed that on your outline. Letter A. Would the child-parent illustration have been better served with props? So originally I planned to have a doll baby and something that can stand on its own here and show them the difference between independence and dependence. Would that have served the purpose better? What are your thoughts on that? Or was there too much of that type of thing? Go ahead.
So I think in some ways that purpose was served by you putting the question to them whether they were dependent or independent. It was a connection point even if it wasn't a visual.
Okay. Connection point even though it wasn't a visual. Okay. Thank you. More thoughts?
I personally would shy away from the doll for upper grade boys.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah. Like you think it would make them feel...
It would open a mocking opportunity.
I didn't even think about that. It would open a mocking opportunity.
But
thank you for that. Okay.
So I think this was actually possibly better than the doll.
So it's interesting you say that because I wasn't actually sure why I shied away from it. Something didn't quite feel right about it. Right? Anyway. Okay, thank you for that. More input on that one. Is there something you have used? I'm constantly trying to come up with tools that they can hang on to. So far, the dependent-independent thing, as far as I've gone with it, has been like, especially in upper grades, they learn about taxes and they learn about, so we can talk about dependence there. So you are your dad's dependent as long as you are dependent on him, right? That has worked fairly well. But if there's something that would work better, I would just love to hear that. Yes?
One of my favorite tools is a little bit shifting to the whole dependent clause. Take it out of the sentence and have them read it without it. You can usually tell if you have all of it or not.
Good. Very good.
Yes,
take the dependent and read it without it, which is actually what Tiana had done when she took, where were we, with Tiger Stripes out. She took the phrase out and just isolated the independent clause. Good. What else? Anything else on the independent-dependent part? Yes.
I just thought of like standing. Some people, not a whole lot, but some people have to depend upon others to stand, where most of us can independently stand.
Good. Good. That works really well, especially with little siblings. If you know that they have a little brother or sister at home, you know, or if you have you're the teacher and have the child yourself, and you say, you know, this person can't stand without help. Good. Okay. If there's nothing else on that one, we will move then to number two, the filter. All right. And this is the one I would like to spend the most time on. So my question on this one is, was that too much writing? And this is how my filters usually look. And then the back side, I have all my signal words, which we hadn't gotten to noun clauses and signal words, and that was on purpose. This book does not cover it. We won't get into that until eighth grade for them. But I like to give them a little bit of exposure so they know that something is coming, that they don't have the whole. And the other thing is we have some overlap on adjective clauses and noun clauses in particular. And they can come to a sentence that has a clause built into it, and they're like, this is something we haven't learned yet. And so it's nice for them to know that, well, you know, it could be one of those mysterious problems that we don't know how to solve yet. It's kind of like the mystery around that. So this is the type of filter. We actually do this every year. They build their own filters. This was a lot faster, right? We don't nearly do it this fast. And it's a bit more thorough, a bit more methodical. We do a little bit each day, but for purposes of trying to illustrate where it ends, I was hoping to get through a lot of it. Plus, this lesson covers quite a bit of it. So, let's talk about the filter. Too much writing for the students or teacher? What were your thoughts? They literally, I think their hands were starting to get sore. It's summer, so, but, you know. What are your thoughts? Too much writing for students or teacher? Also, is a teacher with his back turned teaching? I do.
Which, so in your classroom, it's actually a lot less writing.
Correct. At one time. Correct.
At one time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say no.
So if we could, if this would be spaced out, you could see it as a, okay, all right, good. Yes?
I just had a question. Do you always, do your students always vote it themselves, or do you ever, just it out and hand it to them for the sake of time?
I have that on letter D, and this A, B, C, D thing I would love to just mix together. What do you think? Tell me. I'll wait to tell you two. I hear what you think about that, okay? I'd love to hear your thoughts first before you hear what I do. Yes, Joey?
I think something that might, if that's speculative.
Are there any more of these?
I don't know.
Where is he? Somebody sit where he can see one. Somebody share with him. There we go. Yeah. Thank you.
I was just going to say, I could see a value in maybe building something that has blanks to fill in, where they weren't needing to draw the arrows, but they're still plugging stuff in.
Okay. So maybe go ahead and have the skeleton built, and they fill in the blanks type of thing.
Particularly, when you were having to tell them where to write it on a piece of paper, that's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. So as I was teaching, I was wasting my time and theirs by telling them, so go a little further to the left or a little further to the right or up or down or leave space for, yes.
Especially if someone's struggling to quite figure out what they're a little slow writing, and then they miss something, and then they're doing it wrong. I think the blank idea is, but for sure having them write it, they'll remember it way better.
Yeah.
Okay, so you would vote for writing it, having them build, write it, but not build it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it keeps them accountable for their own handwriting.
Okay. So if they can't read it later, it's not. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good. Speaking of handwriting, mine's atrocious on the board, but yes.
I think if I would hand my upper grade boys pre-written sheet like that, I think there would be some fairly loud sighs as to what the whole thing means.
Okay.
And I would spend just as much time explaining what I meant by the sheet.
Interesting.
As getting them to make it themselves.
Interesting. Thank you. So he says he would spend as much time explaining it as, telling them how to make it themselves. Good. More input.
Another thing I found is the experience of doing something like that in class tends to form a mental image that they go back to better than if you had a piece of paper.
One thing I do with this type of thing is would introduce it at whichever grade level I typically have them do something. And then my students have a journal book that it stays in. So in the consecutive years, they have that same book, and rather than rebuilding this thing, they've got it.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And use it as they're working.
So what do you think about that? I mean, obviously you like it. What do the rest of you think about that? Do you think that's a good idea, or should they make a new one each year? Yes.
My students are terrible for having a prop and shutting their mind off and using the prop for everyone.
So no prop.
I hate
prop. You call the filter.
I hate like the CLE multiplication tables and math charts and those things.
Yeah.
And so I would be hesitant to carry something like this over from one year to the next.
Okay.
Personally.
Okay, there's that. But Joan is saying they get used to what they have and they've made it themselves and it's just a part of them. There's a part of the, this is in their toolbox and they bring it. Okay. What do y'all think? And he's saying bad idea. Yes.
Well, not necessarily.
I know, but yeah. Yes, Nate.
So I kind of agree with you about CLE math charts, but I've found a good balance that works in my classroom is to say, maybe for the first quarter you can use these, but then they put them away. Or at this test, you will no longer be able to access this chart.
Okay. Great idea. So do you think a filter like this is going to make them lazy? What do you think about that? Yes?
I think there'd be a lot more memorization just having written it down. Uh-huh. They will remember better.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. I think that all, personally, I think it would outweigh the...
How many of you have studied Spanish? Raise your hands. How many of you have studied Spanish? Okay, good. How many of you have mastered Spanish? Good. Excellent. Good. All right. So, and you didn't do it in one school term, right? Or in a half a semester or something, right? Okay. So, this is when I want to have sympathy for my students, when I feel like they're groping in the dark and their answers may just as well have been a guess, right? And I want to have sympathy for them, I think of studying Spanish. Because that's how difficult it was for me. I'm studying it, and I'm thinking to myself this, and I feel like I need something concrete to get a hold of, and a sieve, if you will, something to put this in, and there's a reason that it comes out where it does. Maybe a little bit like algebra and formulas and all that. We heard about that yesterday in upper grade math. That is the idea of this tool, but I want to be so careful that we don't create lazy students. And we just give them, yeah, all kinds of props that I think I would definitely, back to whether I use pre-laminated ones. I don't use pre-laminated ones because, yeah, it takes a while to explain it, like you said in the back there. But not even so much that is it's not theirs. It's not their work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't become a part of them like something that they had to write themselves. Year to year, I can see it both ways. It would save time just to have them use it from year to year. On the other hand, we actually have a lot of fun making them, and especially the girls get so creative with them, and they can spend hours, and it's great, or hours, lots of minutes. It's great spare time work for them. It's great work for them to do during decorating it while I'm reading story. They're sitting there, and instead of just doodling, they're actually making a really nice chart. And I like to make charts and filters for anything I can dream of. A, it gives them something concrete, that this is how this works. B, it solidifies it in their mind for them. All right, now, what part of this was too clumsy, too disjointed? Let's talk about just critique the filter, if you would. And I don't mean this selfishly at all. I'm not trying to get you to help me with my next school term. But I'm saying let's look at how we can improve it. You know how we get curriculum sent to us, pre-printed paper sent to us, and we're teachers, right? We're always changing. Well, yeah, we kind of like it, but we're always... So what could be done differently? Lots could be, but tell me what feels disjointed to you. I assume it's the first time you've seen it because this is original with me. So what doesn't work for you? And I'm going to say the girls, the ladies will feel different about than the guys probably. So what?
I don't have a problem with the flow, but not all courses begin with them.
That is correct, but they're going to learn that yet. And see,
okay,
I'm not allowed
so you're
to.
Saving that.
Correct. And so this would get a blank. I should have actually put the blank in. There should be one more blank in there. Thank you for that. Okay, and I had. Good. So what about if this would move down here?
I would.
Would that be better?
Yeah.
Because I had thought of that. Everybody follow what she's saying? She's saying this piece should be under dependent. Mm-hmm. And then I would still need a blank.
Yeah.
I would still need a blank under that. Good. Thank you. What else? Yes.
I had found it valuable for students to have an example, I think Joel Schrock calls them basic Bob sentence, for each thing that they can plug into, for example, for your phrase, just to town.
Mm-hmm.
That actually goes on there and they can compare. Or, you know, for an adverb clause after... or something
so
very
would,
simple. That
would you put it off to the side? Would you put it up here? Where would you put it? Would you put it where, like,
below? I mean, you have begins with a preposition.
Okay, so below a phrase, or go ahead.
Underneath where you have begins with a preposition, then you would have your
example.
And okay. They can compare anything they're looking at with that example. It's not going to always help.
Excellent. So he's saying if we'd have an example blank yet, or we put an example of, yeah, good. I wonder if it would work. I've done this. I've put material up here that's supposed to go through the filter.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if we could put it up here and then show where it ended. You know, that might actually work too. What else? Other things that don't quite work for you. And you're saying, if I'd be your student, nah. Mm-hmm. That would have just been confusing. Because I really think there's a high potential for that. Especially as upper grade teachers, we tend to think that we come up with something that's going to work really well, and we end up with a student who is just like, really? That was just way too much clutter, way too much. And especially when you start getting dyslexia and things like that, and they just say, nah, forget it. Just give me the rules, or else let me just guess the size, the amount of words, and I'll call one a phrase and one a clause and hope for the best, right? All right, what else about the filter?
I just want to say I like the idea.
I mean,
this idea of a sieve or filter, yeah, it's new to me. I like it.
Okay, thank you, Gilbert. Yes.
And as a moderate dyslexic, I would have just made it more than one color.
Excellent point.
The phrase would be one color, the clause one color.
Excellent point. Yeah. Yeah, and I found that really helpful on the whiteboard. Oh, actually, I use a chalkboard. I found it very helpful to have multiple colors of chalk at the chalkboard, and I do that all the time, and I'm not dyslexic, but so I'm colorblind. I can't actually see what color is what, but I can tell it's a different color, so that helps a lot just to, yeah, anyway. All right, good, thank you. What else on the filter? Anything else before we move on? Yes?
And you tell that's a whole lot. That's way too much info for one class.
Yes,
like,
thank
you. Like you said, you go it slowly.
Too much info for one class, for sure. And you will also find, if you use something like this, you'll find that you have to, like anything else, review it over and over and over for them to be. But here is something I do toward, I don't know, actually. I can't give you a month, but at a certain point, the students have to put whatever it was through the filter before they may raise their hand and ask me.
Mm-hmm.
That's just... did you put it through the filter? And then if it went through the filter and there's still, because there are problems like that, especially when you get into the mysterious ones. All right, anything else? Yes.
I think I stated my point, overstated it as far as the charts.
Either that or I just overquoted you. I think
well,
I overquoted you.
There's a balance there.
Yeah.
But I really do like this for myself, the practicality of on the board, I would probably abbreviate. And another thing that I think of in trying to apply something like that, maybe combine some classes, some grade levels, because there's no way I can do this for all of the grade levels at once.
Excellent.
Or maybe it's more feasible if I do more grade levels at once than if I try to do them individually.
Excellent.
And then possibly, I really like what you did when you asked, what is an adverb, what is an adjective? Throw some of that. My students have benefited tremendously from having to verbally tell me what the definition of the eight parts of speech are. Mm-hmm. And they're absolutely terrible when they start out.
Right. And by the end of the term.
And they can just pop it off, and it's tremendously helpful.
Right.
So incorporating some of that verbal recitation with something like this, I think, could be very powerful.
Thank you. Yes?
So where on that chart would you put like the understood, subordinated, and relative?
Where would I put the understood? What was that?
So
oh,
I have a hard time with my students.
Like two to eight.
Okay, did you hear the question? Where would you put the understood ones on the chart? You make an X somewhere, is that what you're going to do? Right? Yeah. So that, I would say that falls into a rule category, and I'm not sure that it would, if it's something that we can put on the chart other than just mentioning the rule. Just because, you know, they aren't all listed and sometimes they're understood. Just like an understood you, I'm not sure that you can really put that on a chart. Somebody else have feedback on that?
Welcome to the English language.
Yeah, true. Right. Okay, good. Thank you.
Is there any benefit with taking that chart that you created on the board and actually have done on a big poster board that after you create it with the classroom, as you create it, it's like always up there up front for them to always have their eye and you can quickly go point at it?
Yeah, so my biggest question with that is, and what do you do at test and quiz time?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have actually had students who struggled enough with certain spots of this that I will let them use it for specific tests, or I don't know about tests, but quizzes,
mm-hmm.
until they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
They're allowed to, I don't give them any help, but they're allowed to use their own filter that they made and run it through like they're used to running it through. Very good point. Make a poster. Yeah, and it's not something you have to always be. I usually have them get theirs out, and I have my own. And they have the same general format, so we're able to speak fairly. But I think that'd be a lot more efficient. Make one that everybody can see and you can point to it. Yeah, good. Anything else? Okay, so let's go then. I would just really, really like to go to number five. Number four is sort of a moot point, I think, because it just ended up not being a class that, anyway, it was very difficult to try to, anyway, I'll leave that. Number five, what would you consider an integral part of the class and what would you consider elimination material? One of each, please. Who wants to go first? What would you just get rid of? Yes.
Sorry, I didn't know you were calling for the eliminated.
Either one, doesn't matter.
So the way you consistently called on individuals to answer, but in random order.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I would say that's golden because they would all have to pay attention.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you for that. Another one.
Also asking either direction. Why after they answer every time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because, I mean, you can get to where they'll try to guess, you know.
Right.
Have you asked? Even looking hopeful.
I like it.
When they say the wrong answer and say, okay, well, why? And then they have to kind of think through it.
Yeah. And you even have students who watch your faces, they give the answer to see. They're like, oh no, then they change it. They're like, oh, why? Yeah. Thank you, Mike. That's a very good point. Yes?
Another thing that does is it brings out the principle of retaining knowledge. You retain best if you teach, and if they have to tell you again why,
good.
They're basically teaching you.
Good.
And through that, they better retain.
Excellent. Excellent.
You.
Thank you for that.
One thing I heard from. He said in there that if you run into a question and you a student and you ask them why and they can't answer it, well, you can go on to the next student, they answer correctly, but then you go back to that other student and say why and ask that question to them again and have, until they have repeatedly correct thing. I found that helpful in my classroom to think about doing that, having that student repeat the correct one, even though that other student just gave it.
Good point. Did y'all hear that? That was a great point. Thank you for that. And so it makes them, they're not unplugged. They're not exactly off the hook. Yeah. You know, a big thing with the why, one pitfall with the why, it's easy for my students, or it's easy for me, I have to be very careful and not make them feel stupid then when I ask them why. Well, why? They don't have to prove anything. I just want to be sure they were thinking and try to help, yeah. And if they actually have the wrong answer for why, sometimes it's even funny. They'll give a why answer that's like, and they know it's not going to be acceptable at all, but they just give it, I'm like, no. So why? And then we get that. Yeah, good. All right, elimination material, please. I really want that. What would I, and now I am being selfish, okay? What should have I taken out of this? Just boom, doesn't need to be there. And it would help me a lot. Yes, Gilbert.
Well, I'm a big believer in asking them questions like that. I do find sometimes it gets, if you let the question go on too long, like when you're figuring out that disoriented my poor veteran,
yes.
It may have got a little bit confusing because it just kind of kept.
Yes.
You may have lost some of them.
I lost some, I think you're exact, and I actually felt that happening. Thank you for that. I felt that happening. Very good. Okay. So don't let the question dangle for too long. Bring it to a closure, and even if they can't get it, show them where, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, thank you for that. Good. Another one. Yes.
It's a tiny detail, but it's something I actually ran into big issues with.
Okay.
When you have an opinion, when your opinion about the curriculum isn't positive,
Okay, good. When your opinion about the curriculum isn't positive, don't say it. Good. Good. Excellent point. Yeah. So just a little bit of pushback on that, though. What about helping them to be okay with that? Would that be okay? In other words, so the Bible is perfect, and we give it no pushback, right? Mm-hmm. But the curriculum is not inspired of God, right? And I don't say that lightly at all. And I think sometimes, how can I say this? I think sometimes, if we're not careful, we give them the impression that the curriculum is infallible. But excellent point on not being critical. I really, really, really think you have something there, Jonah.
I'm totally with you. I think what you're trying to say is that the teacher is supposed to be the master of the curriculum.
Thank you. That's what I'm, yes.
And it's not
exactly.
Being critical. It's just saying, this is the way the book was written, but we're going to do it like this.
Yeah.
And that could have come across as critical, the way I said it could have. I really, really like that.
Popped
yeah.
Out to me.
Yeah.
And like, you can just say, this is the way they're doing it, but I choose then give them mm-hmm. a reason, maybe. Like,
excellent.
It doesn't work for me or
excellent.
Because of this situation. And I don't say you always need to have a reason for that, but Mm-hmm. I had a bad attitude about a curriculum and it created issues.
Good, yeah. I mean, no, not good, but yeah. And speaking of Christian Light, so here's another thing. I would give them a huge shout out. I'm a huge supporter and a huge fan. So, and here's another thing that this shows what bleeds through to our students, right? I hope that it would bleed through to my students that I'm a big supporter of them because I truly am. And that is why I never even thought of being critical when I said that. Mm-hmm. So we need to watch that as teachers. Mm-hmm. We can come across as something that we didn't intend to be. Yeah. Very good point.
Is give praise. Like, I mean, obviously Christian Light doesn't do everything perfectly.
Sure.
There's some things they do really, really well. And when we get to those lessons, you can say, I love how this is presented.
Yes.
Better than anything I've ever seen.
Good point. Yeah, good point. Excellent.
One question yes. I've had a couple times is it a good thing or not to often be coming to someone to the blank where you're not filling in?
Okay.
And just saying, well, we'll talk about it later. Uh-huh. Or would it be better to say, now these are going to be noun clauses, but you don't need to fill it in now, and almost like, I don't know, sometimes my younger students just love when I, now you're going to learn this in eighth grade, won't learn about infinitives, but this is the definition for infinitive. Uh-huh. And they kind of like it and they start hearing it. They don't have to fill it in on the chart, but they know that now they're coming. I'm just wondering.
Good point. And that was to my number three. Did you see that was on number three? So number three says, was the extra information, info not specifically taught in this lesson, helpful exposure or crippling clutter? It wasn't actually exposure, was it?
It didn't feel like that to me. It almost felt more like clutter because there wasn't actually any information given. It was just a angle.
And see, I'm all into the mystery part
to me.
Of life.
Yeah.
You feel that coming through? And yeah. That's I appreciate your pushback there, because what happens is, if everything's just mysterious for them, then I don't actually give them something tangible to be like, oh yeah.
Whereas maybe half information, like these will be noun clauses, but you don't necessarily give a definition.
Excellent.
Still might provide the mystery in it, but a little bit of noun.
Yeah. Not so much dangle. Yeah.
I guess I like those points. I thought that was a strong point, because okay. That's going to be satisfying for them. You get to that lesson, you say, okay, pull out your filter, here's the next topic.
Okay, well, there's that too. There's that too.
Probably going to have a different index on different
students. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you're right, Mike. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like they think a little bit different.
Yeah. Right. Right. Which is what's so neat about a class like this.
When I was a student, I would say, with them, my teacher would tell me, "You'll learn this in eighth grade." I'd be like, "Ah, you didn't know that." And I could hardly focus on the rest because what is that?
Okay. Yeah. You were going to say something, Dennis.
What they said, you know, if you got two seventh grade boys and they're ready half lost, and you give them some more stuff they don't need.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like 3 minutes to the short talk.
Okay. You're dismissed. Thank you so much.